This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
And our next guest is on the line at the moment. Thank you for joining us, Kath Kenny, who is a research writer and is going to be chatting to us about a book called When Betty Rocked the Pram, Staging a Revolution, which I think will have some very familiar stories to a lot of Melburnians who were around for the pram factory. So, Kath, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Eve.
Pleasure. So, Kath, before we get talking about the book, can you tell us a little bit about your background as a writer and how did you get involved in the arts? What led you to this point in time?
Look, I've always done arts reviews. So I've reviewed film and books and theatre for a long time, on and off. But I've also been recently done a PhD, and this book grew out of a PhD when I started to research the women who are at the pram factory that I really knew nothing about.
Yeah, well, and that's the odd thing, is that you're a Sydney-based, and you're writing about the pram factory. I find it, you know, like, how did that all come about?
Right. Well, I actually grew up in Victoria.
Oh, okay.
And I went to the University of Melbourne, so I was really fascinated when I learnt that so many of the people at the pram factory came out of the University of Melbourne. But funnily enough, there was a few people who moved up here from that world in the 80s and 90s, and one of them was a woman called Kerry Dwyer, who was one of the founders of the pram factory, who now lives in Sydney. And she kept all these records about the women's play that I write about in my book. And it was, funnily enough, I had always thought of the pram factory as David Williamson, Graham Blundell, who was Kerry's partner, and Max Gillies, yeah, and people like that. And I hadn't heard their stories, the women's stories.
And it was very legendary. I'm originally from Adelaide, and I knew of it because of some of those names you just mentioned then. And it hasn't been around for a long time, has it?
No. So they moved into the pram factory in 1970. It's a really old building that started off as a horse's stable for people living in Carlton that couldn't keep horses in their small backyards. Been a coke den at some point, a boxing ring, and in 1970, a group of people like the ones that I've just mentioned, in their sort of late 20s, early 30s, moved in because they wanted to create this new Australian theatre, and it lasted for 10 years. They had a flea market downstairs, Skyhooks played there at one point, and they just had new Australian theatre and cabaret and reviews on every night of the week. A lot of famous people came through, and it was a really long time for a collective and a really sort of radically democratic theatre to last, in that, you know, you could be a star in one play, but you'd have to be on the box office in the next play, or cleaning the toilets just before you can get Max, because he famously would clean the toilets just before he'd go on to sort of prove this sort of democratic world.
Yeah, and so this is the 50th anniversary of this play.
Yes.
And what was it that really sparked your interest in it, apart from, you know, like, having close contact with somebody in Sydney? What was it? Why have you used this for your PhD?
So I was really interested in the when I was starting my PhD, I started to notice all these, you know, a revival of feminism and personal stories in the media. A lot of women were writing columns and books, and I thought, where did this phrase, the personal is political, start, and how did those women in the second wave of feminism, where the phrase became a common sort of phrase of feminism, how did they understand that? And at a, about the same time that I started my research, Bernadette Brennan, who'd written the literary biography of Helen Garner, had devoted a couple of pages to Betty Can't Jump, because even though Helen Garner wasn't a member of the Pram Factory, her then-husband Bill Garner was. And in that book, Bernadette Brennan wrote that Helen felt like a theatre widow, she left out. And so I thought that's an interesting story. This was before Helen Garner was known as a writer. She was a school teacher at the time. And I just wanted to investigate how the women at the Pram Factory found their voice. And I just found this amazing story about consciousness-raising meetings starting at Helen's house not long after she and Bill had separated, and she was they were experimenting with collective households, women living together to bring up their children. You've got to remember this was a time when there were still separate columns in the paper for men's jobs and women's jobs.
Mm.
Women couldn't go into bars. But they were very active in the anti-war movement, running through moratorium marches. So women were saying that we want to have a voice at the Pram Factory too, which was really focusing a lot on sort of the ochre plays. You know, David Williamson, who was there just in the first couple of years of the Pram Factory, you know, wrote plays like The Removalists and Don's Party. And some of the roles that the women had, Carrie Dwyer, who ended up directing Betty Can Jump, played Susan, the bimbo in Don's Party, and they said, this isn't representing anything about how we really feel as women.
Yeah. But it was such a strong movement here in Australia with those women, and it really changed the course of, you know, the women's lib really stood up and was taken notice. And do you think that it went back a little bit after these powerful women, or, you know, like, and then it's only been in recent years that it's reared its head, that's come to force?
Yeah, well, one of the really fascinating things I found when I was researching Betty Can Jump, which was the first women's play that was on at the Pram Factory, was that afterwards it led to all these women. There, people like Evelyn Crate, who some of your listeners would know, Jude Currie, who ended up being starring in Prisoner, they went on and did a whole lot of women's shows and influenced the Pram Factory to look at sort of feminist themes about motherhood and abortion.
Yeah.
Then there was this group that started up a couple of years later called the Melbourne Women's Theatre Group that put on cabarets, and, you know, there were people like Jane Clifton and Sue Ingleton there. But then, I read an article in an arts magazine at the time that said you can go out every night of the week and see women on stage directing and performing. And when I was writing all of this, I remember just in 2009, there was, it was almost like we had this amnesia sometimes with feminism. There's sort of a upsurge, like you say. And then there was a season announced at Belvoir, not that many years ago, by Neil Armfield, his final season, that was comprised of almost all male writers and directors. And there was a theatre practitioner called Joanne Erskine who wrote a blog about this. She went to the launch and couldn't believe it. And it, in the last 10 years, there was this sort of real reckoning again in Australian theatre about the lack of women directing and writing shows. And I think we've seen the same sort of resurgence, at least in Sydney, where I've been seeing theatre, of women on stage, again, almost every night of the week, you know, from Prima Facie and there's just so many. There's Nakia Liu, who's just almost the most performed director in the last few years.
But then, of course, there's Melbourne's Joanna Murray-Smith, who has really forged a huge career for herself as a playwright, hasn't she?
Yeah, but often I think because women's history is not that well recorded, we sort of don't sort of see a sort of a lineage of the work that's been done before and the connections
Hello? Are you still?
And I think also seeing a broadening out of what women's theatre means too, with a lot of Asian Australian sort of performances at the Sydney Theatre Company, and Grace Chase presenting shows about trans women's experiences. And we're seeing again, it's like a renaissance happening.
So this book is out now. What's it called again?
It's called Staging a Revolution, When Betty Rocked the Pram.
Right, okay. Sounds fantastic. And is it available everywhere in bookshops?
Oh, look, it's in good bookshops like Reading.
Yep, brilliant.
You can also buy it direct from the publisher, Upswell Publishing,
yep.
Or at, you know, a lot of those online stores, or you can ask your bookshop just to order it in for you.
The best idea, the best idea. Well, thank you for talking, and also thank you for writing this book, because it is an important part of history, women in theatre. So, yeah, it's great that it's available.
Thank you so much, David.
Pleasure.
Thank you. We've been chatting with Kath Kenny, who is a research writer and has just written the book When Betty Rocked the Pram, Staging Revolution, which is about Carlton's pram factory and the women behind it. As you heard, you can find that in bookstores. You're listening to The Joy Sunday Arts Magazine 94.9, and we'll be back with you shortly.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.